The best, Jerry. Jerry, the best. The best, Jerry. The best.
It is well accepted that Jaws is an all-time great film, but its progeny don't rank nearly as high. Two True Freaks is proud to present Is It Jaws, where Paul Spitero and Sean Whalen are joined by an all-star list of guest hosts to review old and new films and place them on the Jaws scale, where they're ranked from Jaws to Jaws 4. Of course, for the purposes of the show, that scale does take some liberties with their actual ratings. Sure, movies that are given the ranking of Jaws are considered classic films with few flaws, if any. A ranking of Jaws 2 indicates that the film is very good and worthy of repeated viewings. A Jaws 3 ranking indicates the film was okay, but that's all. A Jaws 4 means it's ranked as a bad movie. Oh, and if you ever saw Back to the Future Part 2, you know that there's a Jaws 19. That ranking indicates that the movie is so incredibly bad that it's actually fun to watch as a result. So please join Paul and Sean as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Jaws? And if you're counting, you will see that you are up to episode number 200. So there should be some sort of fanfare going with that.
And there was much rejoicing.
And 200 episodes at an episode every other week, which means 26 episodes a year, means I've been doing this almost 8 years. You're a little shy of that. You got to catch up to me.
I'm enjoying being here, though. So we're going to get there.
And if anybody doesn't recognize that voice, that is my co-host, Mr. Sean Whalen. Welcome aboard, Sean.
It is a pleasure to be here, as always, especially for this episode. This is a biggie. Congratulations.
Ah, thank you. And congratulations on being part of it. So we didn't want to just do a tradition. Well, actually, I can't even say. I was going to say we didn't want to do just a traditional movie review for episode 200 because there were several movies I thought, well, this movie is special. We could do this one. But ultimately, just when we were bouncing ideas back and forth, we came up with the idea of doing our top 20 lists of movies. And that comes with the disclaimer that my top 20 movies today might be different than my top 20 movies tomorrow, depending on my mood, depending on what movie I think of. There may be some movie that you'll mention that because we did not share our lists with each other. There may be a movie you'll mention that I'll say, oh, I didn't even remember that one, and that's on my list. And we had such a difficult time doing it that our top 20 lists became top 30 lists. So, you know, we're giving you 30. These are far from written in stone, but this was our effort to come up with that. You know, I think you and I are similar in that I've just been a movie fan my whole life. I've always loved going to the movies. I've always had an appreciation for older movies. You know, I just got back, and, you know, now I'm on this, you know, making an effort to take movies that I consider to be, you know, classics or semi-classics or movies I've heard about for years that I haven't seen and to watch them. And my wife and I were on an airplane the other day, and I watched the original version of The Taking of Pelham 123, which I had never seen before. And I really enjoyed it. But the beauty of it is, my wife looked over, I had it on my iPad, and she said, why don't you save that for when we're watching movies together? You know, so just the fact that she's into doing that kind of stuff with me is really, you know, it's a big plus. It makes it so much more fun to go through a lot of these old movies.
This was hard to do. It was hard. Like, it was funny. I remember you texting me saying, like, let's bump it up to 30. And in some ways it made it easier. In other ways it made it harder. Just because we were, you know, just covering just a larger library. What I started doing for this, I did a desert island list. It was basically if I could only take 30 movies with me to an island, what would those 30 movies be? And it's how I kind of bumped certain movies off the island, because you were pretty cruel on this one, saying things like you can't count a movie series as being that single slot. and I admit I would have cheated. So you gave me some parameters that I just had to stick by.
And just for what it's worth, my top 30 list, which I am holding up in the air right now, has 35 movies on it. because what the way I did it was, as I thought of a movie, I put it in, and then I would think of another movie, and then I would think, okay, where am I slotting this? Mm-hmm. So movies that I thought were in my top 30 are not. But again, like I said, if I started to make this list from scratch tomorrow, they might be in my top 30. I don't know. But I'm going to only go with 30. I guess what we'll do is we'll mention all movies, we'll give a brief background, and then just keep moving on, because if we're going to cover potentially as many as 60 movies, you know, we can't spend too much time on any one.
Sounds good.
So why don't we start? We'll work our way back from 30. What do you got at number 30?
So number 30 for me was The Natural with Robert Redford. And so anybody that knows me real well, I am a very casual sports fan, but when it comes to film, I really enjoy sports movies, especially really well-done sports movies. And there were three of them I actually put in this slot at one point in time. I had Field of Dreams in there. I had Major League in there. Very different movies. But The Natural is one that I go back to for comfort food. I really love the story of Roy Hobbs. I love the casting of the movie. It's a ride. And there's something special about that movie. I want to go engrave a bat after I see it. And it's just a real special movie. So it's one that this is one that benefited from the fact that we extended it out to 30, because it was one that I got to take with me on my island. So
cool. Now, that was one I saw it in the movie theater. Mm-hmm. And I'll say I've for years have said, oh, that movie's overrated. It's so silly. You know, the ball comes apart, all of these things that happen in it. And you know what? I probably should give it another shot, because I haven't seen it since it was in the theater. And maybe I'd be a little bit more forgiving and understanding of it. And now, you know, as we're recording this, baseball season is creeping up on us. And, you know, usually, we try to get a baseball movie in then. So I think maybe you just picked the movie that we're going to cover for the beginning of baseball season.
I like it.
So my number 30 is The Dirty Dozen.
Ooh.
With Lee Marvin, and just, you know, it's a formulaic movie that's been done so many times. But this is one of the best ways it was ever done, you know, and we're going to see that formula again to some extent on my list, at least one more time. But, you know, it's Lee Marvin is awesome in it. It's got an all-star cast, you know, Ernest Borgnine, Charles Bronson, James Brown, John Cassavetes, Robert Ryan, Telly Savalas. It's just, you know, it's one of these ones. It's similar to some other movies that were made later, where it's almost two movies in one, because there's the training sequences and then we get to the actual mission that they go on. But just to me, it's a deep dive adventure that I just love going on. And I've, you know, my whole life, I've pretty much loved it.
And like you said, an amazing cast. I mean, that's a who's who, for action movies. My 29 was Four Weddings and a Funeral. And I struggled with this one because I'm a Richard Curtis fan. We talked about Blackadder and, you know, obviously, Mr. Bean and things like that. Richard Curtis obviously having a big role in those. It goes back to kind of what we were just talking about with Dirty Dozen and The Natural. It's the cast. This was people that these were friends that by the end of the movie, I felt like they were my friends. There's that Richard Curtis humor that I just love. A lot of it, listen to our commentary on Blackadder, and you'll get kind of a flavor for why I like the writing so much. But that's why that one made number 29.
And that's one I haven't seen in quite some time either, but that's one that I think may have been overexposed initially when it came out, but has been underexposed since. And, you know, it hasn't had the legs that maybe it should have. So that's another one that maybe we get, you know, maybe we need to take a look at that one day on the show.
And my love for it has come in later years. So there's a point to kind of what you're saying there, because at the time it really was pretty heavily exposed.
So my number 29 is Psycho, which just as an aside, we covered on episode 60 of the show. Just an all-time classic, Alfred Hitchcock. First time I ever saw it, I was homesick from school and no one else was home. And I just sat in, you know, I had all the lights off in the house and I had the movie on. And it just, oh man, I was so deep into it.
So my number 28 was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. And I really struggled on that one. And it might be a controversial one for people. I went back through and watched all the Indiana Jones movies, mainly because of the fact that I went to Temple of Doom first. And I also put Goonies in that slot at one point in time as I was going through. I watched all of those movies, and the one I came back to was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I think the reason why that one stuck out for me so well and held on to me for so long was it's an example of a sequel where they went out of their way to do something really different from the original, which doesn't happen a lot. If an original movie worked really well, usually the sequel is very close to like a carbon copy of the formula of the first movie. This did not do that. Actually, Indy was the only one that really returned for the sequel.
Right, I agree totally. They didn't go totally formula on it. And just as an aside, we covered that on episode number 164. I've always thought that movie was unfairly criticized.
I agree.
I think it's excellent. Moving on to number 28 for me, The Exorcist. That movie, I had seen that in, I remember being, you know, when that first came out, you would have been too young. I was just old enough that I remember my mom and dad going with my aunt and uncle to see it. And I was still awake when they came home and they were talking about how terrifying it was. And then several years later, it was re-released on the big screen. And I was in high school and I saw it with my friends and it scared me so much. I didn't sleep for two nights after I saw it. And we covered that on episode number 45, just an all time great, as far as I'm concerned.
And still terrifying to this day. You can watch it for the first time. If you've never seen it before and you're listening to this, and it still holds up as being something that captures you and it will scare you. Really well done. 27. This one, I wanted a Western, and I chose Unforgiven. And I had on there at one point in time, I was tossing between Unforgiven and High Plains Drifter and Tombstone, which I love with Val Kilmer. But the reason why I went with Unforgiven is I love Clint, first of all. The thing that I loved about this movie in particular was the fact that it's this guy who's trying to get past his old life, where he was a killer, and it turns into every corner that he's going into where he's trying to start this new life. People are not letting him move past who he once was. And eventually it's one of those deals where you know where it's going. It turns into a typical Clint Eastwood film revenge story. And by the time it hit it, you wanted to see it.
Gene Hackman was so good in that. It was such a thoughtful Western because they hit on so many other points, you know, of how hard it is mentally to kill somebody if you're aware of what you're doing. You know, you could have the trigger point reflex thing where you do something and then afterwards, you know, you could have the PTSD or whatever. But if you're aware that you're doing it and you have to just kind of carry it out, they really did a good job of showing the weight that put on him.
And Morgan Freeman was brilliant as well.
Yes, absolutely. Number 27 for me, March of the Wooden Soldiers, Laurel and Hardy, which we covered in episode 36. It's been a Thanksgiving staple for me my entire life. They used to, you know, they still show it on WPIX in the New York area every year, and I still make a point of watching it every year, and I just love that movie.
Number 26 for me was 16 Candles. And this is one my wife and I wind up watching every year. I love the cast of characters. It's a great example of an ensemble cast. There are so many characters that are smaller characters in the film that add to the atmosphere. And I find myself laughing every time, even though I know where the film's going. I've seen it so many times. It's just one of those that I find comfort food. It's an example of great writing, great casting, and great pacing. The movie moves at a really good pace, and there's not a lot of wasted energy anywhere in the film.
Oh, excellent. My number 26 is, and this is a little controversial, I think, is It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which Ooh. I love this movie. But, you know, I saw recently somebody posted something on Facebook. One of the creators, I don't know if it was Paul Cooperberg or somebody posted something about, like, how he never found it funny and doesn't understand why people laugh at it. And it's a very clear distinction to me of a movie with a funny script as opposed to a movie that allows the actors to make it funny. It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is just putting them in these crazy situations. And then if the actors don't carry the weight of the humor, it wouldn't be funny. But because of the way they play it, I laugh every time.
It's another great example of a movie that benefits from the cast.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a who's who of talent. And it's one, if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing just on the general basis. Like, who isn't in it from that era?
You know who's not in it? And I found this out from Rob Kelly's movie podcast when they talked about it. Groucho Marx isn't in it. And originally he was supposed to play Milton Berle's father-in-law, with Ethel Merman being the mother-in-law. But for some reason, I think he was ill or he couldn't make it. But he's the one character. And I didn't really even think about the fact that he wasn't in it until I was told he was supposed to be in it. And now it just irks me that he wasn't.
So my number 25 is a caper film. And I really tossed between two movies on this one. I'll go with the second one first, the one that I bumped off the island. Thomas Crown Affair with Pierce Brosnan and Rene Russo. I really like that version of the Thomas Crown Affair, but the movie that I could not let go of was The Sting. And I'm talking Paul Newman. And Robert Redford again. It is just such a good movie. It's such a good caper movie. And the two of them play off of each other so well. It's not their only pairing on screen that is brilliant, but this one just stands out for me as being one that it is cool. And it is still cool. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen this film, you need to do yourself a favor and see it because it's a different level of cool.
I think it may be the best caper movie ever. And mm-hmm. You know why it's not on my list? Because I didn't think of it when I was making my list. If I was making a list tomorrow, now that you've made me think about it, it would definitely be on my list. But we will get a chance before my list is over to talk about Paul Newman and Robert Redford again.
I wonder why.
Next on my list is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson's tour de force. We didn't cover it on the show as much as I guest starred on Trey and Blaine's show and posted it on our feed. But we did do an episode recently that we covered that. And just what a great movie.
Number 24 for me, I'm a big Robin Williams fan. And I had to think through his movie catalog as far as what's the one that kind of stands out for me. Dead Poets Society. I just really love this movie. I end up watching it over and over again. One of the reasons why I think the movie's special to me is Robin Williams really at a certain point in time started showing his diverse chops as an actor. Mm-hmm. He went from being Mork from Ork to showing just an immense range. This comedian who could throughout his entire stand-up career did the wackiest stuff. Could then do a role like this and just nail it. It's another example, though. It's not just a Robin Williams vehicle. The cast in it is absolutely brilliant. And it's an example of, really, if you want a strong movie, it's all about casting. And if you center it just around a singleton person, a lot of times you end up losing something. This is a great example of a movie that just benefited from the ensemble cast. If you don't believe in his students, if you don't believe in the other teachers, if you don't believe in the events that are surrounding it, Robin Williams' character does not carry the weight that it does all the way through. And just a really special movie.
Excellent. Next on my list is The Big Sleep, Humphrey Bogart. Now, this is one of those ones that almost fits into what I described when we've done some James Bond movies, where you kind of can't exactly follow the plot. And if somebody asked you to describe exactly what happened, it's kind of difficult to do because it's so complex that, you're not even sure it makes sense as it's going along. But it's just so cool and so well done. And it's just, you know, it just captures me when I watch it, and I can't turn away.
Oh, we're talking about Bogey again. I love Bogey.
There you go. Okay, good.
My number 23, I'm an animation fan, and I wanted to put something from Pixar on there because Pixar's a pretty important studio for me. I was thinking through their entire catalog, and there's so many great movies, but the one that I went back to, and it's one that I think just holds up to this day just because it's where they captured my imagination, was Toy Story. It took me back to being a kid. If you can't see this because we're not a video podcast, but behind me there's toys everywhere. I'm still got connection with that childhood version of me. It was so great in that film to be taken to a place where you could actually believe that these toys that you played with as a kid had some kind of life to them, had personalities, and they actually cared about the child that they were protecting and helping raise along the way and building a relationship with. It was something that just worked so well in that film. And it's to this day, it stands up just because of, I think, just the special nature of what they did.
I would have almost, you know what, I didn't put any Pixar on my list. I could, certainly could have. To me, it's splitting hairs to try and pick which Pixar film I would go with. There's, you know, at least in the beginning. I mean, I think things now, I think there's a couple that I haven't been too crazy about. And maybe it's just because my kids are older and I don't focus on them the way I did when back in the earlier days of Pixar. But in the early days, like, everything they came out with was gold. It was just, you know, it was just fascinating how they just came out with winner after winner after winner. I think my highest would probably be The Incredibles, but I can't even say definitively. And I think the way you described Toy Story is making, you know, care about the toys, the way they just captured the feel for, you know, what those toys should sound like and what their personalities should be. And oh, great movie. My next is the first comic book movie on my, or, you know, first comic book related movie on my list. And I tried not to oversaturate it with those. I think I have three in total. Captain America Winter Soldier. You know, there's a distinction. We talked, Sean and I, before we started making our lists about, is this our favorite movies or is this our best of all time movies? Mm-hmm. And we did say we're going to go with our favorite. Because Captain America Winter Soldier might be the best movie as far as best movies, as far as the superhero genre goes. But favorites, there's a couple I can rank above it. I'll get to that distinction again in a little while. But just everything about it was well done. And what it was really special about it was it took the superhero genre and it combined it with kind of the government political thriller genre. And it showed that these movies don't have to be pigeonholed into one area.
So number 22 for me is one where I started making a Paul Voodoo doll, because this fit into the category of you can't use a series. So it's Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. And it's, I went through in my head, and I'm talking about the director's cut, the one, the extended, I like the extra hour, give me all the stuff. And it's, so I want to be very, very clear. I'm talking about the extended, expanded version, because you won't let me take the other two. So
you can take them, you just got to take two slots on your list.
That's right. Well, that became problematic for me. But the reason why I wanted to make sure this is on my list and why it's an important movie for me is, I rewatched all of these last year. And what stood out for me from Fellowship is it still gave me those magic feels that I got the first time that I saw it. It was the sense that I'm a big Tolkien fan. I read these books as a kid. They actually managed to bring this to the screen and do an admirable job of getting as close as you can possibly get to the books. I think when you're bringing books to a screen, there's certain choices you got to make, certain things you got to do to adapt it to make a screen situation work. And I just thought they did a really good job of transporting me to Middle Earth. And Fellowship still hits me there. The four hobbits are coming to Fan Expo Cleveland, and I'm looking forward to getting a picture with them and meeting them, just because, you know, that's one of those cool once in a lifetime events. It's where I'm geeking out, but Fellowship is the one that it still gives me those feels. And I think that's that says something that all these years later, I can still feel like I'm still going on the journey and I'm in awe of it.
Can't disagree with anything you said. I do think you're still kind of doing a little cheat there because you're just going to say, I'm only counting one, but you're really counting all three. Who are you kidding?
Well, but here's the thing. I couldn't name all three. I kind of did, but they're not in my slot. The slot 22 is taken up by Fellowship of the Ring.
There you go. number 22 on my list right now is Back to the Future.
Mm.
Just an awesome flick. I mean, you know, even the sequels were great, but, you know, the original is the one. So well done. Michael J. Fox was incredible in it. Christopher Lloyd is great in it. Just, you know, Robert Zemeckis, just, you know, wow. What a great film. That's that low.
That's my number one.
Number one?
Yes.
With a bullet.
Number one with a bullet. And the reason being is I'm a time travel junkie, and that film brought in the fun factor of time travel. I grew up as a kid watching the TV show Voyagers. I'm a big Doctor Who fan. When you brought this time travel and made it contemporary to the big screen, every time I watch it, I still feel like I saw it the first time when I saw it. So yeah, I mean, we get to number one. You've already got my number one. It's Back to the Future, and nodding along with all your reasons for where you put it.
Sorry to steal your number one so low.
That's quite all right. I got more to talk about. So my next one, my number 21 would be Akira. I'm a Japanese animation fan, and I'm not going to say I've got this extensive knowledge bank of it. In college, one of my friends introduced me to Japanese animation. I've read Akira, the manga. And I really, really love that. This film was fantastic. I had two other movies that were on there, that Princess Mononoke and Ninja Scroll, which I had to bump out in order to make room for Akira, because it was the thing to throw. I'm like, Akira's really the one that still stands off to me. It's visually spectacular. I love hand-drawn animation, and this just did a really fantastic job at crafting that world.
Fascinating. See, I've never really gotten too into the anime. But I've heard great things about Akira, so that's as much as I can say on that one. Next on my list is North by Northwest. You know, to me, it's Alfred Hitchcock at the peak of his powers. The ordinary guy in the abnormal situation, you know, going along Mount Rushmore, just everything about it is just great.
That's my number 11.
Oh, I'm stealing from you on right and left. That's here. Sorry.
And wait, well, and it really, that one, I'll talk about that slot real quick. That was North by Northwest. I had Charade and An Affair to Remember that I was like trying to find my tiebreaker there. North by Northwest, I think it's just pacing and adventure. Oh my gosh. That thrill ride, riding along with him in that film. I've been able to watch that over and over again, and I just get excited every time. I just want to go on the journey. Even though you know certain things that are going to happen, it's just everything's happening so fast at a breakneck pace. And he's a terrific actor.
And then you add to it James Mason, Eva Marie Saint, Martin Landau. Such a good movie.
My next one continues the animation trend, and it's Peter Pan from Disney. I was going through my favorite Disney movies. I'm a big Disney junkie. And, you know, I went through Peter Pan, Little Mermaid, which I think kicked off the animation craze again, Beauty and the Beast. And I want to give a minor shout out to Emperor's New Groove, just because if you haven't seen that one, the humor in that one is unique. Those were all in that slot, but I was going back to which one really holds up for me the longest. And It's going back to the original Peter Pan. It's the boy that refused to grow up, and there's something magical every time that I see it. It's one of my favorite rides when I go to Disney World, just because of the fact that I love being transported to that world, and there was something about the way that they crafted and designed it, and the music, and everything that went along with it. It's got the great soundtrack, amazing pacing, and a villain that you just can't miss with.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you do feel that, especially as an older fan watching it, I think you do feel that boy who wouldn't grow up feeling as you're watching it. Like, it makes you want to be that. So, good choice. Next on my list, and I talked about how we were going to have a similar formula one, The Magnificent Seven, which is, you know, it's taken from The Seven Samurai, I admit, but it's the American version of it. It's got an incredible score. It's got an incredible cast with Yul Brynner and Steve McQueen and Charles Bronson. And James Coburn and Robert Vaughn. I mean, it's such a great movie. Another one where, you know, you get the scenes where you're getting the band together, and then you have the actual climax where they confront the villain. Just an all-time great for me.
My next one's Vacation, National Lampoon's Vacation. I'm a Chevy Chase fan, and I was thinking about Chevy's movies and which one, like, really stood out for me as being the one that just deserves to be on the list. And Vacation, again, it's another example of cast. Beverly D'Angelo's fantastic in it. Christie Brinkley does a great job in it. It's the family, the grandma on the roof. It's like the vehicle. I mean, all the crazy stuff that they do in that film. Randy Quaid, it's everybody that's in
John Candy.
John, yes. I mean, how can you miss with that cast? You just want to get in a truckster and drive across the country, sort of.
You think you hate it now. Wait till you drive it.
Eugene Levy was so good.
Okay, next one on my list. And this is, again, talking about favorite as opposed to best. Mm-hmm. Avengers Endgame.
Mm.
You know, see, now, Avengers Infinity War, I think, is a superior movie to Avengers Endgame. But Avengers Endgame is more fun for me, and it brought everything home so well. And I'll tell you, I've watched the scene where Captain America holds Thor's hammer and beats up Thanos with it for a minute. I've watched that scene more times than I can count at this point, to the point where my kids make fun of me. Dad's watching that again, you know? It was such a satisfying conclusion to that whole buildup that went on for years and years and years. So, again, maybe not the best one, but certainly a favorite.
This next slot for me was a tough one because I had to choose. I'm a big John Belushi fan, and I had to choose between two of his films that are just like at the top of my list of being just great comedies. And I chose Animal House. And it really went back to not just John Belushi, the entire cast that makes up Animal House, I think, that really just pushed that one over the edge. The other one was from Blues Brothers for me. But mm-hmm. Animal House bumped it out, and it became, I went with our spirit of which one's my favorite. And Animal House is really my favorite by a slight edge out of his movies. And Animal House really deserves that spot.
On those two, the edge would be so slight too for me. I love both of those movies, and then, you know, you could even start saying, okay, the score / soundtrack on both, either one, man, you know, it's like how do you pick? Number 18 on my list is Goodfellas. Yeah, just so great. And you know, it's very you know, time hasn't tarnished it in the slightest. I mean, it's hard to believe that movie is almost 35 years old. But it's still so well done. To me, it was the last gasp at greatness for me by Martin Scorsese and by Robert De Niro. Like, they haven't done anything that even came close to that since then, as far as I'm concerned. So it's just, you know, top notch.
My next movie might be a controversial one for some people. Flash Gordon. I'm talking about the Queen version.
Mm-hmm.
I love this movie. It's an example of favorite versus, you know, I mean, not every movie on my list is Jaws. I'm going to say that. This one controversially might not be Jaws to some people, and I get it. But I really love this movie. I love the casting. I love the music. I love just the styling. It's a stylish movie. And there's something about this way this film was shot and the special effects. And it's a very unique movie and it's a unique film going experience. And when I'm in the mood for it, I really love this movie and nothing else fits the bill and nothing fits what this particular version of Flash Gordon does to me. I love the character Flash Gordon in general, but this particular film was one that takes me back to my childhood. And I love the soundtrack. I love pretty much everything about it.
Okay, number 17 on my list now, we're up to. This one is my comfort food. This is the movie I've probably seen more than any other movie ever. I loved it the first time I saw it. I've loved it many times. When I was still in school, it was the movie I would put on the VHS tape because I can't sit in silence. I get antsy. So like when I was studying for a big exam, I'd have to have something on, but if I put on a movie that I've seen so many times before, it wouldn't be all that distracting, so I could still get my studying in. I recently saw it for the second time in my life on the big screen a year ago, followed up by the star of the movie coming out and talking to the audience for 2 hours, and me getting to do a photo op with him. Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
That's number five. That's my number five.
I'm sorry, you keep stealing your movie.
No, it's okay. Here's the thing, they both made the list. And I get why your love for it. I agree with you on the whole comfort food thing. It easily made my top five because of the fact that it's easily my favorite Star Trek movie. And I love Star Trek, by the way. I want to be very clear. But there is such a great villain. A great cast. It plays off of the characters on the Enterprise in such a magical way. And the sense of danger throughout the whole thing. I mean, even though you know where the whole thing's going to go, it just constantly feels like a sense of danger, yet doesn't end in such a way where you're like, some movies when they beat you up throughout the film, like at the end, it doesn't feel satisfying. This one felt satisfying at the end. They did just a really good job of taking you through a very dangerous journey. Get through some sadness in there, but at the same time left you with some hope, which is, it's really hard to do that. It's a great movie.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
My next one, and this was a tough category because I had to choose between two of my children again. It was Top Secret. I'm a big fan of Zucker, Abram Zucker. And yes, this bumped out Airplane, which I also love equally. What did this one for me was, I'll admit, Val Kilmer. I love Val Kilmer as Nick Rivers. I think his comedy chops, when he went for comedy, Real Genius is another example of that. It's not on my list, but Real Genius is certainly, if we did like a top 50 list, Real Genius would wind up somewhere in there. This was one where if I was really thinking about what is my favorite Zucker, Abram Zucker movie, and this would be the one I would go to first. Out of all those matches, their writing, their comedy is something that I think they've done something very unique. You either get that humor or you don't, and if you do, this is a special movie.
I think ZAZ didn't get onto my list anywhere. Not that they don't deserve to be, but they just didn't. And that goes back to, you know, hey, if I was doing the list tomorrow, maybe there'd be different movies on there. My ZAZ movie would be The Naked Gun.
Great movie.
They're all great.
You know what did it for me for Naked Gun? It was the fact that I liked the Police Squad show so much better.
Yes.
I love Naked Gun. I love Naked Gun. But the Police Squad show is perfection.
It was, but I just remember when I found out they were making The Naked Gun, I got all excited that when it came out, it was like, oh, I got to go see this opening day. And, you know, I mean, just it was great. Next on my list, Rocky. Another one that we covered on the show, just for the sake of clarity, that was episode number 17 we covered it. And then recently there was a second look at it because I once again was honored to be on Blaine and Trey's show and discuss that movie. So we actually have two episodes discussing that one, and it's just, you know, it's the ultimate rags to riches movie as far as I'm concerned. Well acted all around, well directed. The score and the soundtrack are just incredible. Well deserving of its Best Picture honors that it won that year.
We'll be talking about Sly again. Little teaser.
You have Don't Move Over My Monroe Shooter on your list.
we'll save that one for when we get to it.
Okay.
It's not Cobra. So my next slot, I wanted a Spider-Man movie. And this one I really struggled with because Spider-Man's really enjoyed some really solid movies out there, including the recent Into the Spider-Verse movie, which I was toying with putting that one in there because of just how great the animation is. But I really went back and I said, what is it about Spider-Man movies that really nailed it for me? And I went back to Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man from 2002. I just think the casting of that was great. I think the way it managed to do something that was a rarity, I think, in superhero films was nailing the source material about as close as you could get to it. Yes, they made some choices, but the relationship between him and Mary Jane in there, I just absolutely loved. I loved Willem Dafoe as the Green Goblin. There was something about that world that was being crafted, Aunt May, believing in what happened with his uncle, those type of things. It just really captured all those feels. It still holds up to this day for me. And it's had a lot of great movies that have followed it too, but that's my favorite Spider-Man movie out of the batch, with a close second to the Into the Spider-Verse one. But, that's where that one fits. So Spider-Man 2002.
That one was covered on episode 66, by the way, and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse episode 65, apparently. It was in an era when you weren't sure if you were getting a superhero movie, if they were going to try and nail the source material or if they were going to be embarrassed by the source material and try and distance themselves from it. And thankfully, they went with the former, not the latter. Next on my list, Die Hard. Die Hard is fun. It was a funny movie for me. It's the only movie I've ever gone to the theater to see alone. And I felt very strange at the time. The problem was everybody I knew had seen it already, and I couldn't, even the people who were willing to see it a second time, I couldn't match up schedules with them to go and see it. So I had an afternoon where I had nothing to do, and I went. I bought myself a big thing of popcorn, and I just sat there, and I ate up the popcorn, and I ate up that movie, too. It's just, as I probably am getting repetitive saying, it's just nearly a perfect movie. Everything about it is just so well done.
It didn't make my list, but man, it's an example of what you said earlier. I think if I did my list again, it would find a spot. It's such a great movie. So I'll just nod at everything that you said.
And I just enjoy that everybody has to debate whether or not it's a Christmas movie. And I don't really care which side of the fence you fall on that. I still find it fun that just that people do it.
I'll be honest, I don't care. I just want to watch it.
Yeah, exactly. I remember waiting until my son was old enough to show him that.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't show him too young for that one, but man, as soon as he was old enough, I was like, come on, we got to go watch this movie together.
So my next one, as I'm thinking through movies, this one I really, really struggled with. And this is another one where I cursed you because of the fact that you wouldn't let me put the trilogy on there, actually. But Godfather. And it's the first one. So Godfather for me, the first one is just a special movie. I watched this during the summer. I was in Tampa Bay and it was roasting. It was in July. It was so hot that like you had to be indoors during the day. It just happened to be, you know, a heat wave on top of what Tampa Bay normally is. So we had a great vacation. We were out there visiting my uncle. It was myself, my brother, and one of our friends. And during the day, it was like too hot to go out and enjoy the pool. So we would go out early in the morning. We would go out later in the day as things started to cool down a little bit. But during the day, I was the only one that did it. He had the VHS, and I'd never seen them before, of Godfather and Godfather 2. And I put it in just on a whim. Just I was reading the back of it. And I'm like, oh, watch this, see if I like it. I could not stop watching it. I ended up watching the first one. Then I'm like, oh, wait, there's more. I was like, I'm so glued to it. And I still feel that feeling to this day. I've watched the chronological versions of those two movies. But if I had to hold myself down and say which was the top one out of the two, I still go with Brando.
That is number one on my list. That is my all-time favorite movie. I saw it. I did not see it in a movie theater. I was a little too young for that, but I saw it the first time they showed it on TV. Loved it immediately. I've seen it so many times in so many different formats since then. I've read the book. I'm actually friends with Joe Puzo, Mario Puzo's son, and we've talked about it. And I almost feel bad like talking to him about it because I feel like, you know, he's heard enough about his father. He doesn't need me being a fanboy. But Joe's a great guy anyway. So, yeah, it's just my all-time favorite. What else can I say? And it's been my all-time favorite. If I redid this list 20 times in the next 20 days, it would be number one on my list every time.
And I get why. It's
and the other aspect of this one is about, I guess, about 4 years ago, my wife and I went to see it on the big screen because they did one of those revival things, and it was just fun to see it up on the big screen. Next on my list is The Searchers. John Wayne, Jeffrey Hunter, Natalie Wood. A lot of people think it's the greatest Western of all time. A lot of people think it's John Wayne's greatest movie of all time. I'm not sure. I like so many John Wayne movies that this is the one that it's representing John Wayne for me on the list. But, you know, different day I might have True Grit here. A different day I might have The Cowboys here. Different day I might have Rio Bravo here. I'm not sure. But this is the one that's here.
My next one is the only film series where I've got it twice. I've got two of the film series on the list. And this one's Casino Royale with Daniel Craig. Mm. And I really struggled with which Daniel Craig movie to put on there. And I find myself every so often going back and doing a full Bond rewatch where I'll just kind of gradually make my way through. I do the treadmill a lot. I had a heart stent put in a few years ago, and kind of my reward for doing the treadmill is favorite movies. So I'll throw on comfort food movies that I just really enjoy, and the Bond movies certainly always fit that bill. Daniel Craig's first movie, it was like, wow, this is something different. I've read a lot of Bond books, a lot of the novels, John Gardner stuff, things like that. Really enjoy all aspects of Bond. And this one was like, wow, this is really an attempt to go back to the roots of Bond and give us something different than what we've gotten. And I really appreciated that magic of that. It reinvigorated me in the Bond franchise again. And I always feel like when I watch the Daniel Craig movies, like I'm getting a new Bond continuity, if that makes sense. I love Casino Royale. I think it's just a great movie.
Well, the Daniel Craig movies are the only ones where it really feels like it has a continuity. The mm-hmm. other ones, you know, the movie ends and, you know, you're going back to square one in the next movie for the most part. You know, there's certain things that carry through. But, I saw that and just ate it up. It was awesome. Next on my list, I think I'm going to steal another one that's going to be high on yours because I just feel it. Superman the movie.
It's my number six. you go ahead, but that's my number six.
Yeah, it was, Superman the movie. Christopher Reeve, he embodied the character so well. This was, again, you know, I mentioned before with Spider-Man that there was an era where you didn't know what to expect when you got movies that were based on comic properties. Were they going to try and be silly? Were they going to be embarrassed by the source material? This is an exception to that. This is a movie where, especially that first hour, the scenes on Krypton and him being, you know, a young man and learning to be Superman and all of that. It's just, it's epic is what it is. And it's just, you know, again, the score is incredible. John Williams as good. I'm not going to say he was at the peak of his game because he's been at the peak so many times. But he was as high in this as he was in other things and just great all around. I don't think I've ever seen an actor that embodied the role better than Christopher Reeve.
I struggled with putting that or two on my list. And what it is both of them are favorite movies of mine. One is definitely, though, much more my favorite movie because it's the better movie. I think two has the better villain. One is the much better movie.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. And there was a time where I thought two was the better movie because it had more action. Mm-hmm. But I've since come around to the other way of thinking.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. That's why it made my number six. My next movie is also a Bond film. This time I had to go back to the guy that started it all for me, Roger Moore. I struggled with this one. For Your Eyes Only is my comfort food, but the one I chose was Live and Let Die. Live and Let Die, the atmosphere of Live and Let Die, the location of it. As a kid, I saw Live and Let Die, I think it was a TV movie before. I did not see it in the theater at first. For Your Eyes Only is actually the first one I saw in the theater. I had seen Live and Let Die before I saw For Your Eyes Only. And I just loved everything about it. It was my first Bond film. And to this day, I never tire of watching it. I can jump. It's one of those back in the days of cable where you came in and you'd watch a movie partway through because it just happened to be on. That was one. If it was on, I'm like, oh, no, I'm watching till the end. Let's keep going. I'm like, I don't care where you're at right now. It's even if it's at the end, I want to see the end of it. But it's an example of just a different, very different setting for a Bond movie that I think just felt the right amount of creepy and interesting, like you wanted to be there, but it also felt dangerous with the voodoo stuff going on. And it's a great comfort food movie for me.
I think Live and Let Die might be the first movie I ever went to see with my friends without having an adult involved.
Mm.
And it's always been, yeah, you know, when you say comfort food, no question about it. It's definitely one that I love to rewatch, and you know, I can put it on any time and watch it at any. It's one of those ones where if you're flipping through the channels and it's on, you're gonna stop. At least for me, I'm gonna stop and I'm gonna watch the rest of it. Next on my list is a return to Paul Newman and Robert Redford, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. It's funny because I totally agree with how great The Sting is. And The Sting, you know, was the more lauded of the two. But I think this is even the better movie. I think this is just such a great movie. There's just so many things about it. That the chemistry between the actors, the chemistry between the whole cast when you get different people on there, and everybody else, I guess with the exception of Catherine Ross, is a relatively minor role, but just the comedy, the action, the adventure, the likability of the characters, everything about it, it's just a great, great film.
So my number 11 we did, that was North by Northwest. Do we want to go on to my number 10, or where are you at on your list?
No, I'll give my number 11, and then we'll go to your number 10. Number 11 for me is It's a Wonderful Life. Christmas staple. I have to see it every year. I'm not one of these people. I'm not going to pretend like I had known about this before it became popular. I watched it when it became popular. When all of a sudden there was a fever out there that everybody was watching It's a Wonderful Life, and every company was putting out a version of it because it was in the public domain. But I watched it then. I fell in love with it the first time. And now it's an absolute Christmas staple that I have to watch every year.
My number 10 is Planet of the Apes, the original Planet of the Apes.
Number four for me.
such a great movie. It's another example of one. I went to California to visit a buddy of mine, and he was teaching at the time. And he taught at a year-round school. So I was on... At the time when I was teaching, I was on summer break. So I went there to visit him knowing that he was going to be working during the day. I arrived that evening and he had the box set of them, and I'd never seen them. So he's like, do you want to watch one of these? And I said, sure. I said, throw it in. His sister worked for a magazine called Mouth to Mouth, and it was like a free giveaway that he got from there. So I'm like, all right, like, let's start watching it. I watched the I did not stop. I watched all the movies during my visit with him. So the first one, though, that was the magic. The first one drew me into the world. It drew me into the cast. I wanted to keep following the rest of the journey. And I've seen it on the big screen since. We have a Cleveland Cinematheque here that will run old movies from time to time. They'll run original prints of movies when they get a chance to get them. And this is one I've gotten a chance to see on the big screen. Loved seeing it there. It's just a magical movie. So definitely deserve to be on my top 10 list.
I saw Planet of the Apes in the movie theater at 6 years old. And I saw it multiple times in the movie theater. I've seen every Planet of the Apes movie in the movie theater. So, yeah. Number 4 on my list. Number 10 on my list, Star Wars. And I think I may be controversial with some of our listeners because they can say, boy, that's awful low, number 10. That should be number 1. But you know what? It's at number 10 right now. Today, it's number 10.
It's number 9 for me. You're talking about A New Hope, right?
Yes.
I still call it Star Wars, even though it says I put A New Hope on, and I'm like, why am I doing it? I call it Star Wars, but it's...
I refuse to call it A New Hope.
I do too, but I'm just more clarifying for people listening out there. Star Wars is number 9 for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody who would listen to this show who doesn't know why that's on our lists.
Oh yeah,
So number 9 for me, The Empire Strikes Back.
Wow, yeah,
that's just the way they fell, and again, I could see people saying, why isn't that your number 1? You know what? It could be. It's not, but it could be. I don't blame anybody who it is, number 1. And, I totally get it. Just kind of, you talked earlier about having a sequel and kind of turning it on its ear. The Empire Strikes Back definitely did that. It did not say, let's do a formula and do the same story over again, but, slightly different. They did a totally different story. They built on what they did in the first one. There's a reason why that original trilogy is so loved.
Number 8 for me is The Quiet Man. That was my genre. I love that movie. There's something about the setting, the cast. John Wayne is just so cool in that movie. We've talked about it on the show together. It was one of our early episodes together. Yeah.
Episode 137.
It's a special movie, and definitely on my short list.
Number 8 for me is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Now, this is a movie that takes a little bit of, for lack of a better word, I'm thinking tolerance. You need to kind of really get into this one. You can't multitask. You can't, be just kind of giving it a half-assed version of watching it. You got to watch it. You got to focus on it. You got to just feel it. You feel like you're in the Old West, even though it's a spaghetti Western. Just the dirtiness and the sweatiness and just the double crossing that's going on right and left between these characters. Just my all-time favorite Western. Put it that way.
Number 7 for me is Casablanca. This is another one my wife and I watch over and over again regularly. It'll be, we're scanning through things to watch, and all of a sudden you come across Casablanca, and it's like, let's watch that. I struggled between this and Maltese Falcon as far as what to put on my list, but comfort food-wise, favorite movie-wise, Casablanca I always go to first. There's just something about the cast, the setting, another example of great music and a great story, and it's iconic. And there's a reason why it's iconic. And that's where Casablanca fell for me.
And, when Scott's been on the show, he talks about his criteria for rating something as Jaws. And one of the things he says is it has to be quotable. Casablanca is immensely quotable.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of interesting that, I had Star Wars, then I had The Empire Strikes Back. I have The Good, Bad, and the Ugly, and then I go to another Clint Eastwood movie, Dirty Harry.
Great.
I can sit and watch Dirty Harry, and I can recite the dialogue as I'm watching it. So if you want to talk comfort food, that's comfort food for me. I saw that in the movie theater as well. I was 9 years old, and just, you know, probably wasn't appropriate for me to see it at that time, but I don't care. I loved every second of it, and I've loved it every time since. Clint Eastwood is just amazing in it, and it's just couldn't be much better than it is, as far as I'm concerned. And I believe we covered that on the show. I think Andy Leyland and I did, if I remember right. Episode number 6.
Wow. So
early on, we did that one.
6 and 5 for me, we already did. We did 6, Superman the movie for me, and 5 was Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan for me.
Okay, so number 6 is my James Bond entry, Goldfinger. My all-time favorite James Bond movie. I'm trying to remember the exact sequence. I think I saw Goldfinger on TV, then went to the movies with my brothers and saw a double feature of You Only Live Twice and Thunderball, and then saw on the big screen when it first came out, Diamonds Are Forever. So I really had a whole James Bond upbringing back then. But Goldfinger is the one that kind of just made me understand the gadgets and the intrigue and the great, you know, backgrounds and, you know, places that he went to and all of this stuff. And to this day, it's just my favorite Bond by far. You know, you mentioned Casino Royale. Casino Royale gave it a run for its money. I'll give you that. But Goldfinger is my favorite.
That's a great movie.
Number 5 on my list is Jaws. You know, what more can I say? We covered that, by the way, in episode 1. Or actually, no, I think it was actually episode number 2, because the timing worked out that, we did it episode 2, because episode number 1, we did Star Trek Beyond, because the movie was just released and we wanted to get it out before it got old. Anyway, but, you know, what more can I say about Jaws than it's Jaws?
So number 4 for me, and this was really hard, Batman Begins. And the reason for Begins, I was struggling with Batman 89 and to a certain extent Batman 66, but I was really going to Batman 66 because of childhood nostalgia. If I was going to sit down right now and watch a Batman film, which one would I choose? And it's Batman Begins. And the reason being, it's the film that's about Batman. It tells his origin. It tells his training. It gets into the head of Bruce in a way that no other film's been able to capture. Just did such a brilliant job of that. It's not perfect. And it's an example of there's a part which wouldn't be hard to guess that I have an issue with being a Batman fan. It was a certain choice that they made towards the end, but it did not ruin the overall experience of a film that just took me on a journey that I've always wanted to go on as a Batman fan. And I thought Christian Bale did a great job in it. I think the casting was absolutely brilliant. And I love the kid that played him. Everything just worked really, really well in Batman Begins. It's easily my favorite Batman film right now.
And it's interesting that a lot of people have said, you know, that The Dark Knight is a better movie, blah, 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 blah. And I've kind of gone with the thought process that The Dark Knight may be a better movie, but Batman Begins is a better comic book movie, a better superhero movie. And there's something to be said for that as far as I'm concerned. And yeah, I've debated that with some people who don't care for it as much for whatever reason. I think because of the efforts to make it, you know, grounded. But I just think it was grounded in a really, really good way. And yeah, I'm on board with that. What number was that for you?
4.
Yeah, number 4 for me was Planet of the Apes. So we can go right to number 3.
Rocky 2, which is interesting and controversial maybe. I actually like Rocky 2 better than Rocky. And it makes my number 3. Now, admittedly, I don't know that I get the emotion in Rocky 2 without having Rocky first. And I'm not trying to cheat by saying that, but I will say if I can only watch one Rocky movie and I'm jumping to a Rocky movie, for me, it's 2, because I want to see that story. I want to see Adrian when she gets up and tells him, win, There's so many good moments in that film. Mickey, you know, getting him up to work and seeing him train and just seeing the fight between the two of them. It's such a great series. But two for me is the one that it's comfort food. I love Rocky II. I never get bored of it. I watch it over and over again. I don't necessarily need to watch. I love them all, but I don't always watch them in chronological order. There's many times where I'm just in the mood and I'll throw on Rocky II and I just want to watch it.
Yeah, I could see that. Number three for me, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Great movie.
Non-stop thrill ride from beginning to end. Great characters. Great, it's surprising to say great villain because Belloc is, not really a physical match for Indy or whatever, but just the psychological head games that go on between them and everything. He's always got kind of the muscle behind him. But the nonstop action it's been built on since then in a lot of other ways, but I don't think it's ever been done better.
Number two for me, Horse Feathers, the Marx Brothers. Its pacing is top notch. As my two favorite Marx Brothers movies, I struggle between this and The Night at the Opera. Why this one always wins, though, moment for moment, I think it's comedy perfection. You care about the characters. I love them by the end of the movie. I can watch this over and over again and never get bored. I never get tired of a scene. I never get tired of a gag. They just have this way in this film of just timing all the way through. I root for them to win. I root for their hijinks, and I laugh every time. They were so ahead of their time. It's a film that I started watching the Marx Brothers when I was in college, and I ended up catching one of them on American Movies Classics. It was Animal Crackers and then Monkey Business I watched. But then when I finally saw Horse Feathers, I just fell in love. This is a movie to this day I watch over and over again. A couple times a year, I'm good for watching Horse Feathers, and I just love this movie. Just really well done, and glad to say it's my number two. It's a solid number two for me.
Horse Feathers was the first Marx Brothers movie I ever saw. I was probably, maybe 7, 8 years old. I loved it. I was cracking up through the whole thing, and it started a lifelong love of the Marx Brothers for me. I adore their movies, and I have behind me here, you can't see it. Certainly you can't see it on the audio podcast, but I have an 8x10 photograph of Groucho Marx that's been autographed by him, and it's one of my prized possessions. Animal Crackers I saw in the movie theater because that had been tied up with some sort of legal struggle and they weren't showing it on TV, and then they released it in the movies and me and my buddies went to see it, and I love the Marx Brothers and that's a great choice. Number two for me, The Godfather Part Two. I love the way that they did the back and forth through time thing where you get to contrast Michael Corleone and Vito Corleone and the way that they do things, the way that they view family and just how they deal with different situations in their lives. And I think it's funny because over the years I've gone through different iterations of The Godfather, including, when they had The Godfather, the complete saga, where they took it and they put it all in chronological order. And there was a time where I thought, oh, that's the best thing to watch in chronological order. But since then I've come back around to no. This is better because it gives you that contrast and it gives you that feeling as you're going back and forth between the two. And it's just so, so well done. That's my number two movie, and you've already stolen my number one movie, which is The Godfather. And I stole your number one movie, so I think we're even.
You did, which is Back to the Future. So this was hard to do.
It was definitely a labor of love.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And I'm glad we did this. This was...
frankly, I'm a little surprised that we didn't have more overlap than we did. But I'm glad that we didn't, because it gave us a chance to highlight even more movies.
I think it benefited that we didn't talk. We did a very good job of not talking along the way. We just made our lists.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it benefited from that.
Yeah.
But I hope, you know, I hope everybody enjoyed listening to it. And I'd be curious if you hear any of our choices and you think they're crazy, if you hear any of our choices and you say, you know, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that was a great choice. You know, whatever your thoughts are, you know, come to the Facebook page and let us know what you think of the episode, what you think of the movies we picked, and, you know, where you differ from us, because I'd be very curious to hear. In the meanwhile, we'll be back next time in 2 weeks with another movie that we're going to cover, and we'll see you then.
Happy 200, my friend.
And to you.